Welcome to the Healing Pain Podcast. Your host, Dr. Joe Tata, leads the conversation around the way pain is treated in the U.S. and around the world with experts from the fields of medicine, physical therapy, nutrition, personal development, exercise, psychology, and more. Each week, you can listen to receive free information about ways to treat and reverse chronic persistent pain. Now, here is Dr. Joe Tata.
Welcome to the Healing Pain Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Joe Tata. It's great to be here with you for another week where we talk about integrated strategies for healing from chronic pain and chronic disease without drugs, surgery, or injections. This week, I have another really interesting, wonderful guest. His name is Bruce Langford. He works as a full-time mindfulness coach, speaker, and podcaster. In 2003, he became passionate about helping bullied children when he saw the negative effects of bullying in schools where he taught. Bruce left the teaching profession and became a full-time entrepreneur, delivering anti-bullying, respect, and mindfulness presentations nationally and internationally. The connection between bullying and mindfulness is clear. Bullying declines when mindfulness is prevalent. Bruce is also the co-writer with Brian Tracy of the best-selling book, Cracking the Success Code, and you can listen to him each week on his wonderful podcast called the Mindfulness Mode Podcast. Bruce, welcome to the Healing Pain Podcast. It's great to have you here this week.
Great to be here, Dr. Joe. I'm really excited to talk with you about mindfulness today.
Great. So I spoke on your podcast, which is a really wonderful podcast, probably a couple of months ago. And, you know, we had a great connection. I said, you know, let's get you on the Healing Pain Podcast. Let's talk about mindfulness, because mindfulness is all the rage when it comes to healing from chronic pain. It's great to hear about it, you know, in different perspectives and how people have, you know, kind of landed in the mindfulness space and how it's come into their life. So you originally started as a school teacher.
That's right.
And then decided to leave once you saw bullying happening in school and, you know, found that obviously that wasn't a great environment for children to be in. But talk to me about your transition of how you left full-time teaching to working in the mindfulness space.
Well, I was teaching music, really enjoyed it, but what I didn't enjoy was seeing kids being picked on and bullied and at a state where they just hated going to school. And there was one boy in particular that really made me feel like I needed to do something myself about this, because I mean, the first thought is, you know, somebody should do something about this bullying situation. And then of course you look in the mirror and you realize, well, why shouldn't that someone be me? And so I put together a program that I could take into other schools. And it was a musical program and had drama, it had role plays and lots of concepts about how to deal with bullying. So as soon as I put that out, now this was back in 2003, there was no talk about bullying on the media back then. Yeah. And so I put that out to other schools and I was immediately booked to do this. And after 2 years, I left my teaching job and went full time with this because it was so rewarding. I felt like I was really making a difference. And it didn't take long before I realized that the whole element of mindfulness could really change the dynamic for kids, for teachers. Once they started to understand what it means to live in the moment, then they could realize that they could manage some of these bullying situations in a better way.
Yeah. So I guess, were you teaching in a private school or a public school? What kind of setting were you in?
Yeah, it was a public school, public elementary school.
Yeah. So, and how did you first become, I mean, obviously, you know, mindfulness has come a long way. It's still, I think it still has a quite a ways to go, actually.
Yes.
Really important tool in many aspects of health and wellness. But how did you start to study mindfulness on your own? Did you read books? Did you download audios?
I read books. I did a course with Jon Kabat-Zinn. Mm-hmm. I just really embraced podcasts and audiobooks because, of course, I was traveling to destinations all the time. I had a driver, so I was able to do my blog, and I blogged about it. I listened and I read books, and so I just learned so much about it that it was a natural transition to move toward doing more presentations on the topic of mindfulness. And of course, a lot of people, especially a few years ago, were shied away from it because it wasn't such a mainstream idea, and I wanted to make it more mainstream.
Yeah. Well, it's a wonderful story, and I definitely commend you for bringing mindfulness into the school setting. I know there are many schools that still have yet to adopt that and bring it into education. Yes. I have a good friend of mine is actually a elementary school teacher and principal, and she's looking at developing programs around mindfulness. I think it's really wonderful. So tell me, in your opinion, what is mindfulness?
Well, mindfulness is living in the moment. It's understanding that it's important not to be so focused on the past, not to be so caught up in what you think may happen tomorrow or may happen next week. So many of us, we can slip into that very easily, where our mind is thinking about, you know, what happened yesterday and focusing on it so much. So part of it is living in the moment. And another part that I feel is very important is not judging others, not judging situations, and most of all, not judging yourself, because that can really bring you down if you let yourself listen to that inner voice that is being critical of yourself. It's okay a little, but you have to listen, identify it, and then change it or make that voice, put it under your control.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask you the tough question right off the bat. So I know you now have a very successful podcast and a practice where you help people with mindfulness. There are certain professions where you have to be, I guess, a little judgmental about certain things, whether it's to make a decision or whether it's to figure out what's happening in a particular circumstance. How do you teach certain professionals? And, you know, when I think of, I don't know, let's say, you know, an attorney who has to make certain judgments about their client and the situation they're in. How do you bring that into practice and educate them about that without them losing maybe what they've studied, you know, professionally, or what they've been taught in their profession?
That's a great question, Dr. Joe. One of the things I start with is this. I ask them one simple question, three simple words. What do you want? That's four words. What do you want? What would you like to bring into your life? And a lot of people come to me who are professionals and they say, you know, I'm stuck. I just feel like for some reason I'm not bringing into my life what I want. And when we really sit down and talk about it, and we talk about what do you want, that's a tough question for people to ask. So that's where we start. We start by talking about what do you want? And as we dig in deeper and deeper and deeper, and we find out that there's a tremendous amount of fear interwoven into a person's wants and desires. And they often find that what they think they want is not at all what they want. Mm-hmm. And then we have to start dealing with those fears and realizing that, you know, a fear is only what you've created. So my clients have created stories for themselves, and they've come to believe those stories, and we have to tear them down and create new stories.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. And that's oftentimes what when I work with a patient, I talk to them about the story that they've created around their pain.
Right.
Because with acute pain, it can be actual, like if you have a cut or a bruise or you break something. But with chronic pain, oftentimes it's a story, and oftentimes it's fear-based about what's going on in the brain. And then when you decrease fear, as you know, working with clients, you decrease oftentimes anxiety, and you decrease sadness and depression, and you also decrease chronic pain.
Yes.
What type of clients do you see in your practice? And what have been the surprising clients that you were shocked at that they would actually embrace your mindfulness approach to life and how it helped them in their daily practice, in their daily life?
People who are professionals, who are CEOs or who are project managers, and who are seen by their colleagues as highly, highly successful people. They're thought to have everything together. They've got the big house, they've got the cars, they've got the life that just looks amazing. And yet they are feeling overwhelmed. They're feeling high levels of anxiety. They're feeling stress. And when we start to dig in and talk about the real person behind the illusion, then that's when they start to become happier and more content in their life, because they start living honesty. They start understanding what they're really truly about.
And what kind of things come up? So when you start to, you know, peel back all these layers of the onion, you know, on the surface, everyone says, well, I want to be stress-free and I want to make a lot of money. I think I'm sure you hear that quite often. When you start to get to the deeper layers, what kind of things come up in people's experiences with you when they start becoming mindful of their own life?
As soon as we start talking about this, well, not always as soon as, but as we dig in, I start to hear stories about relationships with parents, things that happened during their childhood that have somehow molded their life for today. We start tearing those stories down. We start investigating those thoughts about their parents and what's happening there. And you know, part of it is we dig into that whole idea of not judging, and they start realizing, look, my parents did the best they could. Yes, this happened. Yes, that happened. There were things that weren't the best, but they did the best they could. And once you can dig in and not judge, understand that it's important not to judge the others, just, you know, accept it, allow these situations, and then move forward, that's when differences start to really become apparent.
Excellent. I love, you know, because really you're talking about emotions that they've had really from early life and somehow have affected them, basically.
That's right.
So you already talked about fear. So in my book, Heal Your Pain Now, I talk about three core emotions when it comes to people with chronic pain, fear being one of them. You spoke about fear. We can talk about that a little more. The second is anger that I talk about in the book. How do you approach anger from a mindfulness perspective? And how do you, you know, work with someone to not only be mindful about their anger, but figure out what the root cause of it is and to decrease it in their life and their emotions?
Well, we talk about it, and one of the biggest problems with anger, Dr. Joe, is that people try to suppress it, because somewhere in the back of our minds, many of us feel like anger is somehow a bad thing, and we try to suppress it, push it down. So the more we can talk about it, bring it to the surface, and then allow it to happen, then it's we can reach it. We can start to accept it and allow it. And that's when things start to happen. That's when people start to say, wow, I never realized that it's okay to be angry. It's all right. You know, and then they start to feel so much more relaxed. And ironically, the anger starts to just dissipate.
So it's okay to be angry when anger is needed at times. It's a core emotion that yes. Oftentimes has a purpose to it.
That's right. It is.
How do we prevent someone from, you know, being angry all the time? Then, so they say, okay, now I can be angry at this person or this thing, but obviously there's a time where you should move beyond the anger and let it go.
Well, we talk about the reasons for the anger. Why are you angry? What is it that's causing this emotion? And we dig deep into it. And once we do, and we talk about those particular pieces, then we discover that the person is no longer so angry. It's just surprising how that works. But much of it also with my clients is through journaling. I encourage them to journal some of this. And many of them have never written about it before. Many of them have never allowed themselves to really explore this. And once they do, they feel this tremendous lightness, like they've unloaded this off their minds. And so they say to me, wow, Bruce, I can't believe how much better I feel as a result of it.
Yeah. Journaling is a wonderful way to kind of release hidden emotions. I know there's a physician, his name is Dr. John Sarnow, who used journaling in his practice with chronic pain patients often. Do you see chronic pain patients in your mindfulness practice? And what kind of, other than journaling, do you use other type of interventions to help them?
Well, I do notice that sometimes with anger, there is pain. That people who experience a lot of these feelings of of anger do have the pain that goes along with it. And it is surprising, or it has been in the past surprising to my clients, that once they start to deal with their anger, their pain begins to dissipate. Mm-hmm. They start, it seems magic to them. They'll say, like, it's just like a miracle. The pain started to disappear. That chronic pain that I've been feeling every day, I don't even notice it now.
Yeah.
And it is through mindfulness. And sometimes we don't even have to deal directly with the pain. Like I said, we're dealing with anger. We're dealing with that story of self-sabotage that the person has been carrying for years.
Yeah, for years. I think that's the key. Is oftentimes people carry these thoughts, emotions, and programming for years, and they have no awareness that it's actually affecting them both mentally, physically, and of course, emotionally. Right. So as a mindfulness coach, I'm curious to know what your daily mindfulness practice is in your life.
Well, I love to meditate, and I find it really helps me. So when I get up in the morning, I have a quick shower, and then I meditate for 20 minutes. And I find that that just gives me a sense of calm, and it gives me a sense of presence, and I feel much more grounded. So I've been doing that for a long time. And then I do just a short workout just to get my body moving. And I have a habit of having a smoothie, which has flax seed in it and chia seed in it, and some of those things that are just healthy for the body. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I have a little bit of cereal, and then I'm just ready to go. I feel energetic. I love having the routine so that when I get up, I don't have to think, oh, well, what will I do first? What will I have for breakfast? Will I meditate today? No, it's routine, it's habit, and it's easy. And I think that's the key, is to create these routines into habits so that you don't have to think about it anymore. You just do it.
Yeah. Now, there are many different types of meditation. What style of meditation do you use in your morning routine, or do you vary it at times?
Well, I do vary it, but I use silent meditation. Mm-hmm. And I have been using the Muse headset, which is interesting to try, and because you're getting immediate feedback as to what's happening from your mind. But I do just love the simplicity of just saying, I'm going to meditate, and I just put myself in the place where I like to meditate, which is consistent. I close my eyes and it's quiet, and there I am. I don't have to set anything up or start an app or do anything like that. So I love the simplicity of silent meditation.
Yeah. I've used the Muse as well. And I've also used something called Heart Math, which isn't necessary for meditation, but it helps regulate your heart rhythm, which helps with things like anxiety and emotions. But I think you have a good point that I think the apps are incredible. And yes, for people who have a hard time just sitting in one place and clearing their head, so to speak, or focusing on one thought like peace or Om, I do think these apps have their place. But ultimately, and I've gone back and forth with myself and with patients as well, ultimately I wonder if we have enough power in our brain and body that we can tap into our own peace and tranquility without actually using those apps. How do you feel about that?
I totally believe that. And I think personally, every day I would just do silent meditation without any apps. One of the reasons I do use apps sometimes is because of my clients. Because a lot of my clients, especially my new clients, they have trouble with meditation, and they find it's very difficult, and they seem as if they need help. They need help from an app. And so I feel like I want to understand how the apps work. I want to be familiar with them so that I can recommend them to someone and say, hey, try this. This is what it's like. This is my experience with it. And you may do it. You may use that for 2 or 3 months and then decide to use no app at all. But at least it's an alternative, and it's important for me to know how those apps work. So yeah, I really enjoy just giving up the apps and doing silent meditation.
Yeah, me too. The other thing I want to go back to is that, so you mentioned you do this every day now. Yeah. I have a similar practice actually, but like all of us, we get busy and sometimes you're not at home, you're traveling, or you have a podcast you have to talk on or a lecture you have to give. So at times there's a day when you're going to miss it. It just happens. It's life. When you miss your meditative practice, how do you feel and how is your day different? Can you articulate that at all?
Well, to start with, what I do if I'm traveling, if I'm doing a talk, which I was a couple of weeks ago, or whatever, I always do get a time in there, even if it's only for 5 minutes, even if it's only for 2 minutes, I make a point of still doing it. Mm-hmm. And so I would say in 3 years, I haven't missed one. But having said that, then if I've only done, say, a 5 minute meditation instead of my full routine, then sometimes I will notice that, oh, maybe I'm not quite as relaxed. And then later on in the day, I'll just take some time to meditate. Mm-hmm. And the important thing is that I don't want to just completely leave it out of my schedule. Because I think even if I do it for 2 minutes, I'm still doing it. It's still quieting my mind. It's still giving me that peace. And so to me, that's what's really important. So I just like to maintain it in that way if possible. Even if I'm sitting on a plane and I just close my eyes for a few minutes, that can be my form of meditation right there.
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, I live in New York City and I've seen people even, you know, close their eyes. And I imagine that they're meditating on the subway or when they're on the bus. Obviously, you know, as you get better at this and it becomes a practice, you can do it almost anywhere.
Yes.
And block out some of the loudest noises, both externally in your life, as well as internally that yes. we all have in our minds and in our heads. Tell us about your podcast. I know you've had you've been on you know, you've had the podcast now for a number of years. I think when you start a podcast, you're never quite sure what's going to happen or how it grows or how people are going to, you know, take to it. What are some of the more positive experiences and things that have come out of your podcast?
Well, it's been really exciting having the podcast, and I've had over 200 guests on there. And I think one of the things is, you know, I get really psyched up because I line up a guest that I thought, wow, I never thought I'd have a chance to talk to this great guest that's coming up. And then I learn things from that person and I'm so happy to share what we've learned together. But sometimes I have a guest lined up that's fairly unknown and I do a little research and I think, you know, I don't know how this is really going to go. I don't know whether I'll learn much. And a lot of times I find that it's amazing. Sometimes some of my best guests are people that are literally undiscovered. They're, you know, they have so much to share. They've learned so much and it's just a different slant. And even my listeners reach out to me and tell me how much they enjoyed some of those episodes. One of the things that I find interesting is that, at the beginning, I thought, well, maybe it'll be difficult to find guests as time goes by. And that didn't happen at all. It's not difficult to find guests. People reach out to me. I meet people at events where I'm speaking that I think would be great guests. And basically, I could probably have a daily podcast and I'd still have enough guests. The thing that's interesting is that I would like to have more women guests. Wow. And it seems to be like difficult to keep that balance because I enjoy having a balance between women and men, but I just noticed that it just seemed like I have more men guests. Mm. And so then I think, okay, let it go, let it be. It's just the way it's working out and don't worry about it. But yeah. I would like to have more women guests.
Interesting. And you're, the people who follow your podcast, do you know what the demographic is? You mentioned that obviously you have more male speakers and experts on your podcast. Are there, you know, is your following more male or female? Do you know what about that?
I don't know what the balance there is, but I do know that more women have reached out to me for coaching.
Yeah.
And that's interesting. And they tell me they listen to the podcast. And just recently when I spoke in Orlando, I had some of my listeners go to the event because they heard me promo it on the podcast and they were women. And they were telling me how much they loved the podcast and so on. So it's interesting. I don't know how many women I have compared to men listeners.
So I know you also have a great gift for the listeners and the viewers of the Healing Pain Podcast. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, it's a PDF that you can just put up by the fridge. You can put that up and it'll remind you about mantras and the value of mantras. It'll remind you about exercise. It'll remind you about the value of meditation. And just a visual that will keep you on track. And you can receive that for free by going to mindfulnessmode.com/calm, C-A-L-M, and you can get that free download. So I hope you enjoy it.
Excellent. So it's a great download. Please, everyone, check out Bruce on his podcast at mindfulnessmode.com, as well as make sure to download the free gift, mindfulnessmode.com/calm. I want to thank Bruce for being on the Healing Pain Podcast. He's been a great guest, and I think the importance of mindfulness is, even though he has done a lot of work for the past 3 to 5 years, it's still really just starting, and it has a place in your life, especially if you have chronic pain or chronic disease. So check out his podcast and make sure each week to follow me on the Healing Pain Podcast at www.drjoetada.com. And we'll see you next week on the Healing Pain Podcast. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Joe, for having me on the show. Very much appreciated. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you for listening to the Healing Pain Podcast. For more information on this episode and access to links discussed, please visit drjoetada.com and click on the podcast tab, where you will find the blog post for this and all previous episodes, and can sign up for Dr. Joe Tada's email list to receive the latest information on chronic pain. Also, make sure to stay connected on his Facebook page at Dr. Joe Tada.